Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And how appropriate to have a little Jimmy Buffett bring us into it. He was just in town out of Riverman, and it is going to be like beach weather today. Ooh. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. How are you?
Hot? Dandy.
Ooh,
dandy. But it is going to be a scorcher today. Let's get this
out of the way right away.
Yeah. I was just reading online where the heat index is it's going to feel between 100 and 105 degrees today, but expected high temperature of 95, lots of sunshine, and just hot and humid. Overnight low will be 70, tomorrow back up to 93 again. We will see a little bit of a cool down Monday, Tuesday, and some much needed rain in the forecast. That is good news.
You need it. You see rain?
According to this forecast, scattered showers, 60% on Monday, 50% on Tuesday.
I sure hope so. I'm looking for a little bit of relief.
Me too.
We need it. We need it. We need it. So, hey, I had a great time yesterday, by the way.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, you have some good buddies there.
Yes, for sure. We have Tony and I played in a little golf outing, spent some time together yesterday. Beautiful AJ Jolly Park. It was nice. They were great, very friendly.
Course was impeccable, great shape, considering you know how warm it's been, you know, the lack of rain and so forth. It looks really great.
Say that most of the areas I was in were very nice. The behind the trees and around by the lake and taking drops and penalty strokes and all that. The fairway, I heard, was in good shape.
All of it. Well, it's funny you say that because Mike Daly, is that right?
Yeah.
Some of the guys I was golfing with. Oh, yeah, that's playable. That's in the shade.
Yeah.
You know, that's in the shade, Tony.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no, that's in the shade. That's good.
I always tell people the two most important things when it comes to my golf game, is it findable and is it playable? If it's one of those two things, I'm all right.
Well, I saw you, you cranked one out there on the one fairway. I think it was number four.
Yeah. Had a couple of good shots. You know, and then some that went awry.
I have a couple of those.
They were less than spectacular, but when somebody asked me how I played, I said, I hit everyone I swung at. That was the key. I didn't have any whiffs.
Oh, that would be embarrassing.
Yeah, it would be, yeah. But it was fun. It was just a nice time and great to spend a little time with you outside of work.
I enjoyed it. And actually, we hung out a couple of times last week down at the old log cabin. That's where it all started. That's where the golf outing came about.
Over a few refreshments.
Gosh, I haven't been down there in a long, long time.
It's a wonderful historical building, and it was a great place to just kind of hang out.
The food looked really good that I saw that was coming out.
It was.
You you tore in a few items.
I did. You know, you can't keep this shape by skipping meals. That's
I might have to go down there again. That's just right over the hill from me.
Yeah.
That's not too far away. But definitely, how old is that place?
Ooh, mid to late 1800s, the first part of the front part of the building.
Yeah. And you grew up right down the road.
Within about 1,000 yards of that place.
Did you ever work there?
No,
I know you worked across the street or across the road. Old 3L. Do you know what 3L stands for?
Louisville, Lexington, and Lafayette, I think. Or something
I thought
like
it was
that.
Latonia, Louisville.
It might Lexington. Be.
I was all remember there was all three tracks.
Yeah,
horse tracks.
Oh, okay.
Latonia track that was right there on Winston Avenue. Then you have Churchill Downs, and which one in Lexington would it have been?
Keeneland, I guess.
Maybe, perhaps. Yeah.
Old 3L. Look that up.
You know, Madison Pike, 17, 3L, it messes up a lot of people
when
you talk about Madison Pike over there.
Yeah, the old address used to be 327 Rural Route 1.
Never heard that one.
Yeah, that's
you're dating yourself a little bit. Yeah, you're absolutely.
Well, I hope we get the rain that's in the forecast because, you know, Lisa and I spent an awful lot of time this last week tidying up the yard. We came down and saw you and picked up some grass seed and got that down, got the straw down, been watering it every day and hoping that it survives because, as you said, you know, if you don't water it every day.
Oh, you have to water it a couple of times, you know. You can certainly do it, or you have another option. You can pick up some sod from our good friends over there at Turpin Farms. Mm-hmm. It's your choice. Mm-hmm. But, sowing grass seed in the middle of the summer, especially right now, I'm anxious to see what kind of results you get.
Yeah.
It can be done. Right. However, it's really the least desirable time, but you know, you're working on things and, you know, that's where you have to go with it. And obviously, you know, never get discouraged if things don't really pan out that well, because you can just come right around the corner and sow grass seed again this upcoming fall, which isn't too far away.
No, it's not. We'll probably do that. And I was telling Lisa, I said, you know, this would be a nice little start. And if we get some, if we get, you know, most of it or half of it up and running, then we'll come back in the fall, reseed again, next year should be great.
Yeah, you shouldn't really, you know, I mixed up a really nice blend for you.
Yeah, tell me about that. What did you
put in there? Well, you know, everyone's familiar with Fine Lawn Elite, which is now Fine Lawn H2O. And the really good thing about H2O is it has water certification, so it's able to withstand, you know, longer periods of drought. You can use, you know, ultimately, hopefully, you end up using less water. But that was part of it, along with Double Play Rye. That was the seed that had the blue coating.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. You know, everybody over in Kentucky likes blue. But Double Play Rye from Central Farm is really a great perennial rye. So that usually comes up first. And the beauty of what I brought out for you the other day was that that seed has been in the cooler at about 40 degrees, 39, 40 degrees.
Nice.
So it should pop.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you're going to water that, you know, at least twice a day, so maybe three times a day lightly, just like a nice little shower.
Okay.
Don't wash it out. Obviously, you know, the first thing I asked you the other day, how much straw did you put over it? And just enough where you can see through the soil.
Right.
That's important. So I think you'll pull it off. I really do. I think you'll see some favorable results. But again, you know, we're in the middle of July. And
the 14th, right? Smack in the middle.
6 weeks away from September. That's not far away.
Ouch.
I mean, we just started this whole season. I don't know. It's just time flies.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
No one
blink,
fun.
Blink.
Blink, blink. Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about as warm as it's been, and we've really not had much precipitation at all.
Yeah.
It's, you know, some areas, some people may have seen some pop-up showers that's been sufficient enough to help things along, but I'm really concerned about a number of things, and it's not just the lawn. We talk about the lawn all the time. Some of our older heritage trees, you know, that are close to the house, we need to pay attention to those. And I think, you know, when we come out of the break, we need to touch on how does the drought affect our trees?
Okay, we'll do that. We need to pause for a moment. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a hot one today. Make sure you stay hydrated and to check on the elderly a lot. And keep an eye on your pets, too.
Pets, too. Everybody. Even yourself.
Yep. But speaking of elderly, some of those elderly trees might need a little attention, too.
Oh, all the trees. All of our trees. The elderly trees, especially. And those that we planted new this past spring. And, you know, we can plant all throughout the summer months. You just need to be a little bit more diligent about your watering. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the drought, when we talk about drought and various things, man, that's been a topic of discussion, Ernie, for a number of years. We experience these long periods where we go without ample rainfall. And you know, what happens? You know, what's really going on? And we create, you know, well, I'm not going to say we create, but if we don't help by watering, you know, some of the things around our houses and homes and what have you, we run into some serious, serious issues. And, you know, just a lack of water can severely limit a plant's growth, period. And ironically, what happens is when we see a lot of things, people will ask me, hey, why is my maple tree looking like this this season? Because part of it has leafed out and the other part of it hasn't. Well, boy, there's a number of things that can come into play here, and that could be as a result of maybe a lack of moisture 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
And those feeder roots just did not make it, and that plant, you know, some of those roots, you know, were starting to die, and there's not enough root there to sustain the upper part of that tree. So when we end up seeing results of what happens to our trees as a result of drought or various other things, it doesn't happen right away. It could be 2 to 3 years on average before we see the, you know, the outcome. So There's a couple of things that happened too. I posted on Facebook a couple of photographs. One of the photographs was from, I was trying to find some really sun-scorched or leaf-scorched leaves on various trees. And the Missouri Botanical Garden had a nice photograph of one of the Japanese maples. And you can see that's leaf scorch. And those outer edges of that leaf are, you know, a real light tan color. And when you see that and they start to cup up and get a little crispy on the edges, that's a sign of leaf scorch. You know, that's a result of a lack of moisture.
Mm-hmm.
The other photograph that I posted along with that is directly underneath it. And actually, that is my Japanese maple. So what else we're starting to see as well, I do water, but I don't have leaf scorch. What I have right there is, because of the heat, is leaf discoloration.
Oh.
So there's a number of things that can occur that can go on with a lot of our trees, a lot of our shrubs, that will tell us, you know, they're indicators. Hey, pay attention to me, and I need a drink over here.
Right.
So please, please be diligent and look after your trees and the landscape. Water your trees, you know, as necessary. We'll talk about how to water trees as well. But sometimes, you know, when we talk about short-term damage, it's just that, like, you know, leaf scorch or leaf discoloration, wilting, things like that. And also trees have a very canny ability to shut down. And when they do, you'll see some premature leaf drop.
Mm-hmm.
That's a result of a lack of moisture. And, you know, trees can do that. They can go into like a shutdown mode to protect themselves and go on throughout the season. Whereas some of our conifers, they don't have that ability to drop needles and carry on.
Right.
So we need to take care of our conifers, our evergreens, you know, all of anything that's around our homes and the landscape. And even some of those larger trees that are further away from the house, if you can possibly get a hose out there and turn a sprinkler on,
mm-hmm.
do so. You don't want to lose a large heritage type of tree like that. It takes a lot of money
right.
to take one down, and you'll never have enough money to put one back in its place no. of that size.
And that's a little good news for us then, because a lot of that area that we reseeded with grass and covered it, and we've been watering with a couple of different sprinklers,
mm-hmm.
That big, big tree that we love in the backyard is right there. So it's getting a lot of that water.
Oh,
you know, we're helping that tree a little
big
bit.
Big time. And if I'm not mistaken, I think your tree is somewhat on a slope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to water a little bit longer.
Right.
And, you know, and hopefully it gets in there deeper because of the slope, you have more water runoff and it's coming down there towards your patio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the long-term effects, well, I just mentioned a second ago, you start to see where over a period of years, maybe a particular shrub or a tree has experienced some stunted growth. You know, a lack of moisture will bring that about. Branch dieback is not uncommon. And, you know, unfortunately, even the possibility of death of that plant.
Yeah.
So it's very, very important that we water. Tim Back just sent out an email alert the other day. And Tim Back is an arborist, and he's been in here with us before in the past. You know, maybe with what we're experiencing, you want to water your trees every 4 to 5 days instead of once a week. You know, you need to be the judge of that, and you need to be the one that goes out there, and if need be, you pull back the mulch. You know, if it's hard on top and you can't stick your finger in there or probe it very easily, then more than likely that tree needs a drink, and you should give it a drink.
Right. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment when we come back.
While we're talking about watering some of our trees, let's talk about some of the methods that we can use to do that and do it successfully.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. 624, going to be hot today. A heat index could be over 100, 105, but temperatures are expected to climb to 94. A lot of heat, a lot of humidity.
Ooh.
And everybody is thirsty. All of our plants, all of our trees.
Absolutely. You know, we're talking about, you know, drought stress with trees and shrubs and so forth. And what ultimately ends up happening as well, it's not just that we'll have issues because of a lack of moisture with that tree, perhaps losing some of its branches and so forth, or stunting its growth, or losing some of those root feeders. Also, we make our plants, drought creates the vulnerability of our plants where insects get into them a lot easier.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden, you know, their immune system's down. And some of the conifers, you know, bark beetles go to them and various things. You know, insects like, you know, spider mites, lace bugs, and so forth, and aphids, you know, they just have their way with our trees and shrubs. And this is really not good. And that just compounds the problem as well. So different ways that you can water, you know, you can have just turn your hose on and just let it run out real slowly around the base for a lengthy period of time. Also, there's those oscillating sprinklers that you can purchase. They're rather inexpensive. You can also get the, they call those impact sprinkler heads, attach it to the hose. Also, if you just planted some younger trees, the gator bags work extremely well. You're familiar with those. You've seen those around the trees. And, you know, most of our trees, the active root system with most of our trees is in, is within the top 12 inches of the soil.
Okay.
So getting a good drink into that area is of the utmost importance. And, you know, you can place like a plastic bowl of some sort or a coffee can, place it underneath that tree until you get about 2 inches of water in it. And that should be sufficient enough, you know, for that tree at that particular moment. And do this about every 5 to 7 days, especially when we're hovering like around 95 degrees or better, give or take. But again, you know, you don't want to overwater a tree either. But some of the larger trees, they can take the moisture.
Okay.
And they need that moisture. That's what's really, really important. And you know, you were talking about that big tree in the backyard of yours.
Yeah.
You know, I would start at the top of that and just let the water run down slowly, not underneath it on the low side, up on the high side. So, you know, it's, again, this is almost like performing CPR on some of our trees right now. You know, watering is so, so important.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm putting emphasis on trees and shrubs, and typically I'm talking about watering the lawns, and I don't want to forget about the lawns, but really just keeping an inch of water or two on the lawn during the course of a month is enough to keep the crown roots alive, okay? They'll respond back a lot more favorably than some of our trees will, because what happens to our trees and shrubs, we don't see that end result until 2 or 3 years from now. Then all of a sudden it's like we're scratching our heads and we're thinking like, man, what's been going on? And, you know, then you have to, unfortunately, you know, good thing we have arborists, but you have to call in an arborist to take a look at, you know, what's going on with that tree. We had a question the other day on Facebook. It was about someone's maple tree where part of it was, you know, it looked really healthy, and the other part of it was kind of sparse. Mm-hmm. It didn't really leaf out this spring. That could be a number of things, and it also could be as a result of a lack of moisture a year or two or three ago.
Really?
And absolutely. Yeah. So when we see those things, it's really hard to determine just how and when those things started occurring or happening. And that's why we'll always ask you, what's changed recently? You know, did you happen to tear up your backyard and remove a lot of things and sever root systems of trees so you can put in a new patio or a new walkway path? You know, those things, you know, are detrimental on trees. And typically you'll see, you know, things happening after that a year or two or three later.
Mm-hmm.
Digging up water lines or putting in, you know, French drains. When you start severing tree roots, you know, cross your fingers because you don't know what the outcome can be.
Yeah.
Or sometimes people will bring in soil and start mounding it up too heavily around the base of a tree so they can plant other things around it. You ultimately end up smothering a tree. You know, the trees of our trees around here, they are our life system. You know, they create a lot of oxygen. Yeah. You know, they take out a lot of pollutants in the air. They give us shade. They save us on our energy bills, you know, shading our homes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But just keep an eye out on your trees. And I just want to put some emphasis on it because, you know, our lawns are another thing, but trees are the most important right now. Sure. I have a large maple tree down in my backyard that I'll turn on a sprinkler system. I'll run my hose down there pretty far into the yard just to keep that tree happy or as healthy as I possibly can.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. You have to pause for a minute. When we come back, we'll find out about Frog Car Willie. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I want to remind you, a great way to stay connected with us is through our Facebook page. You can look us up and like us and post pictures and post questions. But last week, Tony introduced you to Frog Car Willie. Tell us about that again.
Oh, this is a funny story.
You posted some new pictures.
I did. We just recently received a shipment of some pine straw and so forth, and it usually comes up from southern Georgia, northern Florida. And it comes up, it's all palletized, and it's in one of those trailers that typically ride up on a train. And after we finished unloading the trailer, I kind of just, something caught my eye, and I looked over, and there's a tree frog hanging out on one of the pine straw bale pallets.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, that's cool. You don't see them too often.
Right, right.
And so I got a hold of him, and I put him in a big bucket and so forth, and put a little bit of mulch in there and some leaves from various plants. And it was just really cool where... He would change colors almost immediately, Ernie. He turned a brownish color and blend it right in with the mulch, the brown mulch.
Yeah.
And then he would get underneath some of the green leaves and turn green again. So it's really cool how they can camouflage themselves. But what made this little fella special to me is that, you know, he rode all the way up from Florida on a train. He's like a hobo.
Yeah.
All right. And so I'm trying to think, you know, what can I call him? So I thought I named him Frog Car Willie.
Love it.
You like it?
Yep.
Frog Car Willie.
In honor of Boxcar Willie.
Mm-hmm. So I took him home, and what I did, I placed him out on the back deck in one of our planter boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what? Maybe you can control some insects here, see what's going on. And so he was out there for a couple of days hanging out in the box. And then all of a sudden, he was no longer there. And I'm like, wow. He said, I'm looking for him.
Yeah.
Because I remembered my dad had a tree frog that hung out at the camp.
Uh-huh.
He's got a camp out there off the Corsi. And this tree frog would hang out. Remember those old plastic lights you could buy? Retro lights?
Yeah.
They were green, like yellow and red.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every night he would be up in there, and that light bulb kept him warm.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, maybe this guy might hang out a little bit. So he kind of disappeared for a couple of days, and I was bummed out, and all of a sudden, Tina comes inside, and she goes, you're not going to believe this. I'm like, oh, come on. What happened? What went wrong?
Yeah.
And she goes, nothing, but come out here. I want to show you something. So we walked outside of the back room onto the deck, and Frog Car Willie, man, he's still there. He was hanging out inside our crank handle on the umbrella.
Found a nice little place to hide.
And you can see these photos on Facebook. So it was like, yeah, he's still around. So now he's disappeared again, so I don't know where he is. I hope he's still around.
Yeah.
But tree frogs are really cool. And the way he, you know, he was on my hand, he'd go up my arm and go, you know, different directions. And those little, like, padded suction-cupped feet of his, or his toes, it was just a weird feeling.
Sure.
And Derlissa Lewis, thanks for commenting on the post. And you said that you have a lot of tree frogs where you live, and they are. They're really cool. So,
you know, speaking of our Facebook page, Patty Ryan Wilson also just posted a question for you. And she said, I have some type of evergreen in my front mulch bed that is now dead to bagworms. That I sprayed them, and it looks like they are dead now. I'm just wondering if there's anything near Walton, Kentucky, or any place near Walton, Kentucky, that I could take the dead tree to and dump it. That I don't know, Patty.
Yeah, the best thing that you can do, and I think that they had asked a question before, her husband, it was Jeff, that they have an arborvitae, and they have this issue with bagworms. And it does not take bagworms very long at all to set up shop, and all of a sudden they'll strip a tree, an evergreen or a conifer, rather quickly. And sometimes if it's really too far gone, do not spend the money to go out and purchase something to kill those bagworms or get rid of those bagworms, because a lot of time you're throwing good money at their bad. Unfortunately, sometimes you just need to remove a species of the sort and start over again with something else. In regards to her question, I'm like you, Ernie. I really don't know of anywhere to discard that, but certainly I would start off by calling the city. There is, you know, some city officials there in Walton, and I have the number for that, actually.
No, really?
It's 859-485-4383.
Okay.
They might be able to help you with that or have some suggestions.
Yeah, we'll send it back to her on our Facebook page and get her, try to get her the help that she needs to get that thing unloaded.
Boy, I tell you, though, that's unfortunate when things like that happen. And again, you know, part of the topic this morning when we kicked off the show, we were talking about, you know, the issues of stress as a result of drought, a lack of moisture. This is one of those situations where you have a plant that has been under a great deal of stress, and it becomes vulnerable, and all of a sudden its immune system's not where it needs to be, and there are those insects, you know, they have their way with those particular plants, and ultimately, you know, they're there for the wake, too.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately. Unfortunately, you know, that's what we're talking about.
Sure.
It's just those things.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment, and when we come back,
well, we'll give her that information during the break, and we'll just stay on that bagworm.
Okay. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a scorcher today. High temperature right around 94. Heat, humidity, and the index will feel like 100 to 105.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Little warm. Little warm, so I can say.
A little toasty.
I know that we were just talking about Patty Ryan Wilson. She was talking about her arborvitae. She lost it, you know, due to issues with bagworms.
Uh-huh.
Boy, you know, bagworms have really been running rampant this season as well.
Yeah.
And they're still in a young enough stage, I feel, that you can go after them with some organic approaches before they actually get fully developed develop that sac that hangs down, because once that sac becomes fully developed, it's very difficult to control bagworms, because whatever you spray does not penetrate that little bag.
I was going to say, it is impenetrable almost.
You know, when you ever try to tear one apart, it's like elastic, you know, it just like stretches like bubble gum or something. It's very difficult to get in there. But boy, these guys have been having their way with various plants this year. I know that you know, I was looking at a few people's blue spruce globosis, and gosh, man, the activity, it does not take long. Mm-mm. When you have hundreds of these little guys that hatch, keep in mind, inside that little bag, there's 300 to 400 eggs easily that winter over. And, you know, they hatch sometime at the, in mid-June or so, somewhere in that neighborhood.
So they winter over?
Mm-hmm. Wow. They winter over. And actually, you know what's interesting is that, you know, it is a moth, and only the males will turn into, the moth. The female will not turn into a moth.
Hmm.
She will stay in that bag, do her thing. Stay at home. She's a stay-at-home mom, and she lays all those eggs and eventually drops out of the bag itself, and she'll die off. And those eggs will winter over, and the next season's when we see the issue.
See that.
Yeah. So number of things that you can do, certainly do not run out and buy anything if, in fact, you know, whatever plant that you have that they're bothering you with, if you can pick those off, you certainly do not need to buy a spray.
Right.
Now, there's some people who are like, ew, I don't want to touch them. Just get a pair of gloves and just pull those off and put them in a bucket and discard them. But it's not difficult. They'll pull off rather easily. So they're still in a young enough stage, I feel, right now, where you can use some various things. One we call BT, which, I like that, you know, we talk about Fertilum often, and they have a line within the Fertilum family called Natural Guard. So Natural Guard is an organic way to get rid of various insect issues. And this particular product that I'm going to talk about is OMRI certified, OMRI, which is the Organic Material Review Institute that will test these products to say, hey, they are true to what they say they are. So this is an organic way to get rid of some bagworms if you're having issues with bagworms. And using BT, it's not new. It's been around a while. Bacillus thuringiensis, and that is very effective for getting rid of leaf chewing type of worms, tomato hornworm, which we're all familiar with, cabbage loopers, tent caterpillars, bagworms. So very effective on these guys. Or the other choice of product that you can use is anything with spinosad in it, and you'll be successful in getting rid of these guys. It was a few years ago, Ernie, that I had a bagworm issue on my Japanese maple. So bagworms, you know, they prefer, you know, you see them more often on evergreens mm-hmm. or conifers. But hey, you know, they'll get on other things as well. And when they're in that dunce cap stage, meaning that they're kind of inverted and they're small still, relatively trying to get established, look for a place to set up home and start collecting all the debris and needles on your shrubs. They're easily controlled with these products that I'm telling you about. So look for BT, okay, and look for anything with spinosad in it at your local garden centers and nurseries. I feel that there's still plenty of time that we can go after these guys in a safe fashion without harming any of the other beneficial insects and hopefully get rid of these guys. Or you can physically remove them off of your shrub if you're able to reach up as high over that a shrub is. Mm-hmm. The one Facebook question that we received, they had a shrub as 15 feet.
Right.
I do not recommend you getting up on a 6 foot or 12 foot ladder thinking you're going to stand up on a second to the top rung
right.
and pull those guys off. That's not very smart thing to do. So be careful in doing anything of the sort.
Mm-hmm. Exercise caution.
Absolutely. But, you know, again, going back to the theme of this morning's show, you know, keeping things happy in the garden, providing ample water when necessary, going through these drought periods or these periods where we don't get a lot of rainfall, really keeps our plants strong and healthy. And, you know, keeping a plant healthy is of the utmost importance. And they, in turn, can ward off a lot of insect issues just by keeping them happy and healthy.
Sure. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment. And when we come back,
another little dude flying around the tri-state area has been bothering a lot of people. And a little bronzy, shiny color on his back shell. And we'll talk about him when we come back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were talking about the bagworms earlier, and Tony has noticed another flying menace.
I haven't, but a lot of other people have. You know, it's kind of a localized thing. And if you see this little metallic, shiny-looking, bronzy-looking helmet flying around, or a group of these guys hanging out on it, and they look like these little round, like, motorcycle helmets, you know, that's what I, with legs is what I, but, you know, these guys hang out on various, trees and shrubs, you know, and you'll see them in a group and boy, they'll skeletonize, some foliage rather quickly. Wow. And that's the Japanese beetle, roughly about a half inch in size and length, metallic green, like I said, with a bronzy color kind of wing cover, setup, so to speak.
Yeah.
But these guys, man, you know, I might see one or two where I live, but people are just flooding into the garden center. You know, like, hey, man, these guys are like chewing me out of a house and home, you know? But, you know, there's a couple of things that you can do, and they're not going to be here for much longer.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, I tell you something, the last couple of years, it just seems like we've had these localized pockets of Japanese beetle activity mm-hmm. that's just been just crazy.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I remember hearing somebody asking you about that yesterday down at AJ Jolly Park after the golf outing.
Yeah, it was Tony Bach.
Yeah, Tony Bach.
I liked his approach. You know, I know we're golfing, but I really don't want to ask right. you anything. Yeah, it's like if you're out with your friend, it's a doctor.
Yeah. What's this on my hand, yeah. Doc?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, but you know, it's just like he was, you know, mentioning that they're crazy, you yeah. know, and boy, they'll chew the living daylights out of things. I used to have major issues with Japanese beetles years ago, and they would always gravitate towards my European larch, or my weeping larch, I should say,
mm-hmm.
and they would just go to town on it. And
now, see, we haven't noticed any of that activity around our house, at least I haven't.
Yeah, you know, like I said, it's somewhat localized, and, you know, there's a couple things I'm going to add to this whole thing, too, because with things being really dry in a lawn, that's kind of a benefit because it makes it a little bit more difficult for the female to burrow into the soil surface and lay eggs.
Oh, okay. All right.
But whereas years past, we've had adequate moisture in the middle of summer off and on that made it relatively easy for her to get into the soil surface and lay more eggs. And I think that's why we're seeing more of a problem with it. But, you know, this is kind of a catch-22 situation, Ernie, as where I'm talking about, okay, we need to water our lawn, But at the same token, when it's dry, it's somewhat of a benefit, right, you know, in protecting the lawn from the Japanese beetle getting into it. So I'll respond to that in a second.
Okay.
But they love rose bushes. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, grapes, too. If you're growing grapes, they love grapes. And do not purchase one of those beetle bag traps.
No. All that does is attract them.
That's a fact. you know, go over to your neighbor and say, hey, I've been wanting to get you these past couple of weeks.
Sure.
You know, set this up. This will really help you get those beetles out of your garden. That's what they'll all go to your neighbor's house. But there's various things that you can use. And, you know, you have to be careful. And I will say this, if you're spraying something that's in bloom, if at all, if you can remove some of the blooms, because this is going to ultimately end up hurting some pollinators, or it could, or spray, you know, early in the morning or later in the evening when there isn't any pollinator activity, if you're spraying things that are in bloom. But, you know, I like, you know, you could use 7, you could use 8, you could use 38 plus. Any of those products will help you get rid of Japanese beetles. They also have a little bit of a residual value to them, where they're kind of like on the leaves. That might be some benefit too. And if in fact it rains after you apply, you know, you might need to reapply. Also, you can use various types of dust. You know, that's effective too on some of your vegetable plants. You know, use them according to the label. If you're using 7, you know, 7's been labeled to be effective on vegetables, and, you know, we can consume those later on down the road. But there's also, if you're using 7 on your vegetables, read the label, because you're not able to harvest anything for X number of days. And that is to make it safe for us to eat.
Sure.
So keep that in mind. And if you choose not to do anything, that's perfectly fine too. The frenzy of the Japanese beetles getting together, mating, and doing all their business will soon be over before long. But they're here for a little while longer, and I still think, you know, we can be effective in keeping grub issues at bay if we, in fact, go ahead and put down some grub control products. And the one that I like to use a lot as a proactive approach, and you'll have to water this in or the product's not going to be beneficial to you anyway whatsoever, is High Yields Granular Grub-Free Zone 3. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to water that in a couple of times. So it gets into the root system of your turf. And once it gets into the root system of the turf, when those eggs hatch after the Japanese beetle lays her eggs in the soil surface, once they start feeding on the root system of your turf that's been protected, they're not going to be around any longer. So you're going to save yourself a lot of aggravation when it comes later in the year and you start noticing turf damage. And that's a result of grubs feeding on the bottom root system of the turf. A lot of times, Ernie, people will come into the garden center and it's like, oh, wow, you know, my turf's just peeling right up.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm seeing all these holes, various holes and divots throughout the yard, which usually is an indicator that skunks or raccoons, mm-hmm, you know, they're digging for those little treats in the lawn, and that's the grub. So those are usually indicators that you have a grub issue. Also, if you're planting and you notice a lot of grubs in a given square footage of area, that also might be an indicator that you have grub problems. So I still think we have time to keep that grub population down or totally eliminate it by applying High Yields Grub-Free Zone 3. And you can find that at your local garden centers and nurseries that carry Fertilume products. I love the High Yield products.
Mm-hmm.
You do not see them do a lot of advertising, if any advertising at all. It's not a fancy, good-looking package, but it's a great product.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guy. It's going to be a hot one today. Here's a look at the forecast. Temperatures expected to climb up to the low to mid-90s, but the heat index is going to make it feel like 100 or 105 today and tomorrow. We are hoping to see a little bit of a cool down and maybe a little less humidity on Monday and Tuesday. And according to one of the forecasts we read, there could be a 50, 60% chance of showers on Monday or Tuesday, or Monday and Tuesday, which will be a welcome relief.
Oh, you aren't kidding. And you don't want one of those, you don't want a downpour. You just want a nice, like an all day or yeah. half a day steady, like rain shower.
Wouldn't that be
would
awesome?
Be perfect. Mm-hmm. That would be perfect. Is that asking for too much?
I don't think so. You know, I noticed when we were doing all that work around the house over the last week or so, when I was on vacation,
mm-hmm.
it got to the point where you didn't want to walk out on the grass because you could just hear it crunch underneath
ooh,
your feet.
You can't. Do you water?
Yeah.
Yeah, you really need to water. And we're talking about, you know, not just the lawn, but trees as well and your mm-hmm. shrubs, especially if it's stuff that you just planted this season. That's most important. That's a fact. And, you know, do not fertilize anything right now.
No.
I just want to put some emphasis on that. Right now is not the time to fertilize your lawn,
mm-hmm.
nor is it the time to start fertilizing any of your shrubs and trees either.
Right.
You know, there's a lot going on out there with the high temperatures. You know, if
the
anything,
reason,
just a drink.
Yeah,
just
the reason I'm laughing is, you know, how we joke a lot about my garage and my shed, how there's always stuff just everywhere misplaced and all that. Well, it made me think about this was we had a little divider, a garden hose divider unit that I know I moved probably 15 times in the last year or two going, well, we'll never use this. I don't know why we have it. I don't know whose it is. And then when we decided to put the seed down in the straw, the garden hose would come to a certain point. And I'm thinking, how am I going to get this other side water? I want to water them at the same time. And then it dawned on me.
The splitter.
So wound up picking up a really small, another section of garden hose. But by the mm-hmm. time I got back, Lisa had already put the splitter at the end of the garden hose,
mm-hmm.
running an additional garden hose around the big tree.
Right.
And put the sprinkler system there and then just attached another sprinkler to the end of the splitter.
Right.
And it worked out beautifully.
There you go. You know, it's funny you say that. When it comes to hoses, mm-hmm. have you really found a good garden hose?
You know, the thicker, heavier ones are my favorite because they're less likely to kink.
I don't care if it says kink free, guaranteed for life, 20 years. It's got heavy gauge wire in it and won't kink. They'll kink.
Yeah.
I don't care what you say.
Right.
They'll kink. And you know something else? Why is it that if you ever buy, you know, some of the accessories for hoses, like the male ends or the female ends, and you have those nice little like rings.
Uh-huh.
Now it's based on various sizes or thicknesses of the hose.
Right.
What half inch, 5/8, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But they never really come together
right.
and clamp that end yeah. down, the female or the male end.
Mm-hmm. Size matters.
There you go. But you know, it doesn't. Or if you use like the little radiator clamps,
yeah.
those work best.
Mm-hmm.
I like those a lot.
Yeah.
However, you know, you end up nicking your finger with it, or, you know, putting a little cut or a little scratch on
yeah.
it. And it's just annoying enough that, you know, when you're doing other things, it's bothersome.
Sure.
It's got a little tenderness to it.
Yeah.
But why is it?
I don't know. It is the source of frustration for me. And the other thing is that, you know, I don't mean this to sound bad, but one of my pet peeves is when you're finished with the garden hose, put it back on the holder. Don't leave it lay out in the yard. And someone in the house has a tendency to do that.
Oh, you're in trouble. But so, you know,
I'm always the one that has to reel her back up and put it back on the holder.
So you're
it's not either one of the cats.
You're inconvenienced. So you see the hose out, and all of a sudden you're inconvenienced, right? Inconvenienced. But, you know, something else I think is important is when we talk about hoses, you know, I like the brass ends.
Yeah.
But if you just happen to be one of those type of people, just drop it on the concrete surface of the driveway, the sidewalk.
Forget it.
Those brass ends, they'll just start getting nicked up. And every time you put something on the end of that hose, it leaks. Or it never fits well.
That's right. The little rubber gasket is the thing, too, that drives me crazy because we're always changing out the nozzles and stuff, and inevitably one of them will get worn out. And then I know I've got a bag of these somewhere, and I'll spend an hour and a half looking for a, something that'll cost you a dollar back up at Crescent Springs Hardware Store. So I'll run up and get it.
Then you buy another dozen.
Another dozen of them, use one of them, and then lose the bag. So it never fails.
You know, you have to, like, put those on a nail.
I got stuff everywhere.
But you know, something else I think is important with hoses is to have various sizes. So if you buy a 50-foot hose, don't be afraid to cut it into a 20-foot section, a 10-foot section. You'll always need those smaller.
Inevitably, I do.
I don't know about you. I shouldn't. But we a lot of, you know, we're doing that around the greenhouse often. And even down in my backyard, you always want various sizes of hoses. And then, like you said, if you run a splitter off of it.
There you go.
If you got any ideas, if you can tell us that you found the hose that won't kink, or what about that one that inflates? You got one of those?
No, I quit buying those things because they're awful. You just might as well throw that money in the tray.
You know what? I agree with you. I picked one up the other day. It was like that, and it like pulsates.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, it's not good.
It is not what they say it is. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I have to pause for a moment. When we come back,
you know what? Let's go to something a little bit more attractive and talk about some blooming things that will look beautiful in a landscape.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And it is going to be hot today, so make sure you keep that in mind and keep hydrated. Be a perfect day to get to your locally owned garden center.
Definitely. And, you know, what's happening around the garden centers, just to let you know, boy, it's been hot. A lot of us are in maintenance mode, but a lot of us, too, still have some plant material and various things and trees and shrubs on hand that they aren't tired looking. You know, we're taking care of them. We have to take care of them, unlike some people. However, stop by if you're not doing anything. You know, a lot of us have outdoor, outside areas where you can shop at your leisure. It's going to be a little toasty today, but you know what? When it cools down this upcoming week, if you don't come in today, come in early next week when it cools down a little bit and just see still what's around, because this upcoming fall, I have a feeling it's going to be a busy fall season, Ernie. That's because the summer so far has been pretty hot. Mm-hmm. And I know that May was one of the hottest months on record. Is that a fact? Did you hear that?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I'll be the first one to tell you, I know firsthand it's not comfortable. It's not rewarding when you go out there and you're just sweating to death and you're burning up and working in the yard. There's, if you find pleasure in that, I want to know. I know how brutal it can be. I know how brutal it can be in the greenhouse. But
yeah,
I have a feeling that this fall is going to be one of the best falls ever. And a lot of people are going to have a great opportunity to plant things. And on that same note, I'm out next week, so catch the show. Bob Bard's want to fill in for me with Ernie. I know Bob's been busy, and people like Bob and people like Scott Maddox out there at Maddox Garden Center, anybody, Jim at Lakeview, who are doing installs, get with these guys. Mm-hmm. Start thinking about what you want to do this fall season right now. Get them scheduled. Get those guys on the books. And you'll be ready, and you can enjoy the rest of the fall season. And as we go into the fall, you know, the temperatures become a lot more pleasant and cooler, a lot less stress when we plant things, and easier for it to go through the fall season and winter over. So get those guys on the books if you have some ideas about getting some landscaping things done.
Yeah, we do get a little bit of a relief after following a brutal winter, you'll have a beautiful spring. And now an uncomfortable summer. Fall will be spectacular. It might be just because we'll appreciate that a lot more.
Definitely. Before we went to the break, I wanted to talk about some things that are blooming. And some of your friends were chuckling yesterday going, do you think Ernie knows what that shrub is over there?
Yeah, I did get a quiz when I got back to the table.
You did.
I think I did okay.
You did well.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I don't know. because you always surprise me in one way or the other. I think you would know or should know, and you don't know. And if I think, nah, he has no idea, he does know. Uh-huh. So it's always the element of surprise with you.
Yeah.
So there were, before you came up to the table, they were chuckling. So you know what that is, or
yeah, yeah.
I said, I don't know what they're asking.
Now, if you can imagine right there by the tee box on 18 at AJ Jolly, there's great big beautiful grasses right there by the lake. What are those? Because I'd asked you once before that those are spectacular.
You know, there were a lot of
laid
There were a lot of ornamental grasses there, so I don't know exactly what variety or which ones you're talking about.
Well, apparently they love where they are.
Oh, absolutely.
They were stunning.
You know, that's the ornamental grasses, and they just have a graceful look about themselves, especially out there in the wide open on a golf course. And, you know, that's one of those things that once they're established, you know, the ornamental grasses, man, they'll take whatever you throw at them.
Yeah.
And they'll give you that fall show with those plumes on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And voila, you can't beat it. So I did notice since the last time I was at AJ Jolly that they had done more landscaping, or, you know, had planted more things.
They gussied up a bit.
Boy, I tell you what, there were some beautiful tree species there, too. I was looking at some of the willow oaks. They were all around that one particular hole in the green.
Yeah, I was in that area.
Just some beautiful old species of trees there. Yeah. And those are the guys that I'm talking about. You know, we can't afford to lose those species.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a lot of stories that they can tell. And I'm sure they can talk about a lot of hackers that have gone underneath them over the years and even stopped by for a pit stop. You know what I'm saying? But
what is funny is when you do hit an errant shot, you always wind up finding a couple of extra golf balls where other players had.
Yeah. You always find other people's golf balls and not yours. That's funny. You know, but anyway, you know, the plant we were joking about that Ernie's friends were asking me, do you think he knows what that is? And then they pounded on me like, Tony said you wouldn't know what that is.
Right. Yeah.
But it was the Rose of Sharon. It was a hibiscus.
And I got that right.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they're in full bloom, and this is their time to shine, which they are. But on that same note, another one of my favorite types of hibiscus is the hardy variety, the herbaceous variety that dies back to the ground. And then next year you'll have to cut back the previous year's growth, just, you know, a few inches above the ground, and everything rejuvenates and comes back to life from where it died back the previous winter.
Wow.
And you talk about being flamboyant. It's almost like,
Liberace.
Liberace. Yes. I remembered him as a kid. It's like, do you like my ring? I wore it for you. I knew you would. But I'll tell you right now, the hardy hibiscus is as flamboyant as they come.
Right.
Stunning. And you get that, you know, it's almost like the bloom on the hardy hibiscus will not disappoint. Definitely. It will just, it shines. It stands out. And they're almost 10 inches across in diameter.
Yeah. The thing that I did point out when I was asked about that Rose of Sharon is I remember my mom having a couple of them. And for the longest time, she always kept them trimmed back and manageable. And then, you know, when her health began to fail a little bit, they just exploded and started taking over everything else.
They volunteer rather easily.
A lot.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're talking about the Rose of Sharon, anything that's in that chiffon series is really spectacular. And there's lavender chiffon. There's pink chiffon. These particular varieties, the one that Ernie's talking about that we saw yesterday on the golf course, you know, they can get anywhere from 8 to 12 feet.
Right.
And a pretty good spread on them as well. But, boy, when they're in bloom, and they show off, and they look
good
great.
Good pollinators. I mean, the bees love them and visit them quite often. So that's another good reason.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's the Rose of Sharon. And the other one we're talking about is the perennial version. And I really like the perennial version. It just, they're so exotic looking. And there's a lot of charisma about that bloom. It's striking. You know, you become awestruck when you look at it. And I'm trying to find out I'm trying to come up with some really good adjectives to tell you about this bloom. And they're stunning. There's no doubt about it. They're not difficult to take care of. You need at least 6 hours of sun a day for the hibiscus to really, really give you that bloom production and be prolific.
Right.
You know, and when we talk about hibiscus, Ernie, you were talking about the Rose of Sharon. I'm talking about the hardy varieties that are perennials, the herbaceous types. And there's also the tropical types, you know, that we bring up from out of Florida. And you can get those in a tree form. You can also get those in a shrub form. And unfortunately, those guys, you know, they can't winter over up here in our area. So therefore, we need and it's necessary to bring those inside if, in fact, we want to try and winter those over and keep them for the following season.
Right.
But still, they give us a great deal of bang for our buck when we buy those in the spring at the local nurseries and garden centers. But, you know, the hardy hibiscus, it makes for a great border plant. Somewhat, you know, it can form somewhat of a screening if you wanted to a degree.
Right.
And in the landscape, as a standalone by itself, it's still a beautiful specimen, to say the least. You know, propagating a hardy hibiscus, I know you can either divide those in early spring or, you know, one that's established, or take cuttings. You know, a lot of people like to take cuttings. And if you take cuttings, get that young tip growth and start with that and use the root hormone and rooting powders.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And take a lot of cuttings.
Right.
The more you take, the more successful you are. And, you know, when it comes to maintenance with, you know, the hardy hibiscus, it, really not a lot there that's involved. They love sun. They like a little bit of moisture, well-drained soil. And again, you have to keep them well watered occasionally off and on because, you know, it's a sizable plant and they will wilt down. And when we come out of the break, I'm going to tell you some of my favorite varieties of the hardy hibiscus that I'll want you to stop by and look for at your local garden centers and nurseries.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we are talking about some of the great plants that are still available at your locally owned garden center. And this is the perfect weekend to get there and do a little shopping.
Well, there's one of the hardy hibiscus that I have to talk about because you come to thought with this one.
Uh-oh. What is it?
It's called ballet slippers.
I knew you'd like that one.
Yeah, I knew you'd like that. It's part of the Summerific series. And it gets about 4 foot in height. It really has more of a whitish bloom, but it has a hint of pink in it with a magenta-colored circular eye.
Uh-huh.
But it has this whirling effect, kind of like you when you would do, I don't know anything about ballet, but...
pirouette.
And the reason why Ernie and I are cutting up, this is an inside joke that we talk about occasionally here on In and Around the House. When Ernie was going to Northern Kentucky University, he enrolled in a ballet class. Was that right?
I was studying radio, television, film, and theater, and that was a part of the theater program. And, you know, yes, I did.
Yes,
you did. It was fun.
You were to become the next Fred Astaire, and that's where it started, with taking ballet lessons. How funny. But ballet slippers, very attractive. I like the bloom on it is very interesting and different. Also, another popular one from the Summerific series is Berry Awesome. A nice, kind of a deep magenta color on the bloom, very attractive. And one that I really favor a lot that I've had in the garden center the last couple of years is called Cherry Choco Latte.
Oh.
Latte. Choco Latte. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they come up with those names, but this has a very interesting swirl look to the bloom itself. And what's really interesting about this particular hibiscus is that it's got this really cool magenta veining in the leaf, and it kind of it contrasts so well with the light pink colored bloom. It will not disappoint. It has, you know, kind of a darker bronzy colored leaf on the as far as the foliage goes. And I will tell you, it turns a nice reddish color in the fall. And last year, it bloomed its head off. Nobody would buy the poor little guys and take them home. So we wintered some of those over. But as they progressed through the fall months, they turned a really nice reddish color. And they just bloomed their heads off.
Mm.
One of my favorites.
Tony, we have Bill on the line. To change the subject just a little bit, but something you brought earlier, a problem in the grass. Bill's got a nut sedge problem. Bill, can you turn your radio down just for a second?
Alexa, pause. How's that?
Okay.
Perfect.
So,
good morning, guys. We spoke a few weeks ago about nut sedge.
Yeah.
And I had it in my yard, if you remember, Tony.
I do.
And we discussed about possibly buying a new chemical, which I did, and guess what? The next day, it was gone.
So it started working immediately. We were talking that we thought that the older bottle just was starting to lose its potency.
There you go. And it did.
That's always good information to know. And really, it's hard to tell on average what the life expectancy is of a lot of the products that we buy on the shelf. And I think that's so important to date things, too. When you make that purchase, take a black Sharpie marker and date the product itself. And you'll know instead of guessing, you know, how long have I had that? And, you know, while we're on that same note, Bill, and thank you for the update and the information, sharing that with us. There was I think it was a caller a few weeks ago who had some nuts edge issues around her raised bed garden. And she didn't want to spray any chemicals. And we were talking about the 30% vinegar mixture and spraying it. Mm-hmm. And she sent in the photos to us on Facebook, and it started killing it on the top. Now, I don't know what it does underneath to the little bulblets, but it started knocking it back, and it did so in an organic way. So just for those who are listening that want to do it organically, see what happens. But the photos that were sent to us, I can't remember the person's name, it looked to be working very efficiently.
But well, Bill, one thing is relentless. Just unbelievable. In fact, I took your advice and I dated the bottle.
Ah, good move.
So we're gonna keep track of that. I guess it'll last two seasons.
Usually it should last at least 2 to 3. So we'll certainly find out. What I like about the product that you picked up, it contains sulfentrazone in it, which allows us the flexibility to use it next season or to use it 2 weeks from now. And it also works on various other weeds that might be plaguing you. So it's not just only nutsedge. Unfortunately, I have some news to bring about that a lot of us have been using the nutsedge killer from High Yield. They will no longer have that next year. You still might find that product on the shelf at the local garden centers and nurseries. But from my knowledge, I understand that Fertilume will not be selling it any longer. But there's other things that we can use, and I have found that sulfentrazone has done a wonderful job.
Yes. Well, I sprayed my whole yard with it, and guess what? There were things out there that I didn't know I had. So
that's a good thing.
Yeah, so yeah. We're going to be doing the three-step very heavily in the fall, but and that ortho product worked pretty well for me, so.
I thought it did the job. I thought it did it well. So you know, and that, cool. Again, that's a product that's sulfentrazone that's in that in the ortho product. And you know, a lot of the products that we talk about, you know, there's various companies. There's Fertilume. There's Bayer. There's Bonide. You name it. A lot of companies pretty much have similar mixtures of various things. It's really what's in those mixtures that's in combination or the amount by percentages. And always read the labels. That's so important. So, Bill, well, thanks for sharing that with us.
Well, I also want to apologize to everybody. Ann and I brought all this hot weather back from us from Texas.
Oh, okay. well, thank you so much for that.
For my apologies, and we'll try to do better next
well,
year.
We'll accept your apologies.
Thanks, right. Bill.
Have a great week.
You too. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, 749 B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. That's great news, you know, to fix that problem just that quickly by getting new product.
Yeah, you know, we'll continue that conversation because a lot of us are having issues and we're battling nutsedge in the lawn. I have just very little on my lawn. It's taken me a while to really get it under control, and that's what we're doing. We're getting it under control. It's hard to kill it all at once, and I'll tell you why when we come back.
Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We were talking a little bit with Bill about the success he had with his nutsedge and some other challenges in the lawn. And we're going to wrap that conversation up. And something else you wanted to talk about, too. You wanted to finish your bloomers.
Oh, I'll finish those in a second. Okay. But I want to go back to the nutsedge issue. That it can be a problem, and it can really take a, you know, it's not just a one and done kind of thing. It could take up to 2 to 3 years to really get it under control or totally eradicate it. And I always wonder, like, you know, how does that stuff get into the lawn to begin with? And occasionally you will see where some people just allow those to go to seed heads, you know, form those seed pod heads. And I, you know, obviously some of it's windblown and so forth. I don't know how else, you know, they're spread about. But I know one thing, when they're in a lawn or even in a landscape bed, they just start taking over. And it's a difficult type of grass to get rid of because it's a sedge, actually. But it spreads by underground like bulblets. You know, these little bulbs are underground into the hanging out on the root system as mm-hmm. it spreads. And when you spray or apply something to the nutsedge, you know, you're killing the main plant, but you're not really doing anything to what's still underground with that little bulblet.
How do you get rid of that?
Well, that comes up the following season or maybe later in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll say to yourself, you'll scratch your head and you're like, wow, you know, I've already applied products to this area in the past, but it's still there. Well, it is to a degree, but not. You know, you've killed some of it off, but there's still remnants under the soil surface where those little bulblets are that come up later in the season or the following season. So it can take a couple of seasons to get rid of it, and that's why it's difficult to eradicate. Now, you know, we were talking about the product that Bill had used that has sulfentrazone in it. I have found it to work very effectively, and I will probably lean towards that in the future. But the other product, too, halosulfuron, is very effective, too. But, you know, when you mix that, it comes in a real little packet. It's in a cellophane packet. And if you buy it in that form, you know, you can buy it from High Yield, Nut Sedge Killer. You might also find it under the trade name Sedge Hammer. Buy the one from High Yield. It's the same exact product for about $10 cheaper.
Ooh, yeah.
So there you go. So it's not always about the fancy glitz and the advertising and the pretty packaging.
Mm-hmm.
But when you mix halosulfuron from that approach, that little cellophane packet, do not open that cellophane packet up. Drop that into your tank sprayer. It will mix exactly 1 gallon. Stir it up thoroughly, but that little cellophane packet will dissolve. So don't, you know, they don't want you touching it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you mix the product up, you need to add a spreader sticker to it, mm-hmm. a surfactant, which what that does, it helps the product that you're spraying onto the nutsedge adhere to it a lot more effectively. And thus, it facilitates the absorption quicker and it gets into the plant, you know, in a more efficient way. So you need that spreader sticker. Now, a lot of people will say to me, I'll just use Dawn dishwashing detergent. I'll use Joy or whatever. Fine. But mix your product up first. Then add that to it after the fact and gently agitate it into the tank sprayer,
mm-hmm.
about 2 teaspoons. Now, what I don't know is, as a result of various companies cutting back and saving, you know, on cost and so forth, you know, just how much of that surfactant is still really truly in that dishwashing detergent. And some of those now are like these ultra detergents that you need very little or less than what you used to with the older detergents.
Mm-hmm.
It lasts longer, so you need to cut it more. So I can't tell you how effective those are or how, the, you know, or aren't. Now, I will tell you this. When you go after the nutsedge, do not mow 2 days before you apply the product, nor 2 days after you apply the product. Contrary to what a lot of people think, you know, scalping things and spraying things is not the most effective approach. The more leaf surface, the more blade surface that you have, whatever it is that you're spraying, the more product that can get into it. And I can liken it to this. If you touch poison ivy and you're highly allergic to poison ivy and it's just your little finger, that's where the rash will be.
Mm-hmm.
But if you rub it up the whole arm, the whole arm will eventually be a rash.
Yeah.
So the same with the what it is that you're spraying when it comes to broadleaf weeds and nutsedge and so forth. The more that's there, the more product that can get into it and translocate down into the root system and be more effective. So do not scalp things. Also, when it comes to getting rid of various weeds and so forth, believe this or not, it's best to water a couple of days before you apply some of these products because everybody's happy and everybody's feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes those products work a lot better. So if you can water a couple of days before you apply your products, don't mow 2 days before you apply and 2 days after, you're going to be really effective in getting rid of things. Now, with these temperatures, what happens? Sometimes when we're spraying within the turf, our lawns, and right now, a lot of people's lawns are brown already. So, you know, and when it gets hot like this, and it's not as moist, you don't see as much nut sedge. But some of us who water and various things, you do see a lot of nut sedge. But you can do some injury to the turf as well once those temperatures are above, you know, 90 degrees and so forth. Mm-hmm. So beware and just spray the areas that are affected. Don't spray the whole lawn. You know, Bill said he sprayed his whole lawn, but maybe Bill's watering and, you know, he's got a different setup and an environment that's a little more conducive to what he's doing. Refrain from spraying the whole lawn or when it's really hot because you don't want to injure the turf. So there it is. That's my 2 cents on nut sedge. And believe me, it had plagued me for a number of years.
Right.
I have a little bit here and there, but nothing like what I did before in the past. And I have found that soft rinser zone works best.
Yeah. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have to pause for a moment. And when we come back,
well, I have a couple of Facebook questions. I'll tie into a couple of other hardy hibiscus plants that I think are well worth looking for at your local garden centers and nurseries.
Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be hot one this weekend. Stay hydrated. Make sure your plants are hydrated as well. But still a lot of great plant material available at your garden center. And Tony and I were talking earlier about some of the gorgeous plants and how nice it was out at A.J. Jolly Park yesterday. And one of the things that we did take notice of was the Rose of Sharon and a couple of other hibiscus that Tony was talking about.
Yeah, and I like the hardy hibiscus in particular. I know that you were talking about the Rose of Sharon, which is they're totally two different types of plants. The Rose of Sharon, more of a, you know, a shrub form, you know, it loses its foliage and so forth. It's deciduous, whereas the hardy hibiscus, you know, it's herbaceous. It dies back to the ground every year, but boy, it gives you some stellar blooms, that's for sure. So I want you to look for a couple others here I failed to mention. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so it dies back.
Yes.
Do you trim it back like you would do the ornamental grasses and stuff? And then
yeah,
it regrows?
Yeah, late winter, early spring. And it's one of your types of plants that will break dormancy very, very late. So you have to be patient. Do not feel
think
like
it's dead. Don't think it's dead.
Do not, mm-hmm. you know, get the misrepresentation that it didn't make the winter and dig it up and dispose of it.
Right.
Because they're one of the last to flush out. And then all of a sudden, when they start coming on like gangbusters, it's like, boom, they're there. And they make a statement. But there's two others that I really like a lot. And probably I have to say, I lean towards this one in particular. It's one of my favorites. It's called Midnight Marvel. It's been out for a few years, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful red bloom, almost, you know, several inches across. And what I like about it is it's dark foliage, the dark leaf foliage on it, and it's just stunning. My neighbor down the street has one, and I've been wanting to take a picture of it and put it on our Facebook page, but have never stopped to take a picture of it. But every day I admire it. I really think that it's stunning looking. And the other one, last but not least, Mocha Moon. You know, we've been talking about going back to the moon again, so here we go. Mocha Moon.
Mocha.
I like this one too because it has a scarlet red eye, really simple, but it has a deep bronzy greenish colored foliage to it, and I think it's very, very attractive. So there you have it. Look for these guys at your local garden centers and nurseries because they're in bloom. So are the Rose of Sharon's. They're in bloom.
Mm-hmm.
Other various things. You know, you're going to find some perennials that are in bloom, like echinaceas and so forth, the galardias. So if you're still looking for color, this is where you're going to lean towards. These are the guys that give you that summer top-notch performance. You know, some of the Shasta daisies and so forth. So get out to your local garden centers and see what's going on. I know it's been hot. But hopefully, if Ernie's forecast is correct,
oh, of course,
the owl sleet forecast, that next week we're going to cool down a little bit. I mean, it's going to be pleasant, a lot more pleasant than what it is now. So in the 80s, but we need some of that rainfall.
Right. You know, we were just talking about hibiscus, and I noticed you had an exchange with one of our listeners on our Facebook page, Angela Brown Weber, about her hibiscus. And
yeah.
She just reposted a picture of that. And so she says she started all of her hibiscus from cuttings, but they haven't started flowering yet. And you responded back to that to give her some advice. And then she posted this beautiful picture. Is that what you were talking about?
I didn't see the picture yet, but she had taken a couple of cuttings from her hibiscus and was like, you know, they haven't bloomed yet, started flowering yet.
Right.
You won't see them flower this year.
Okay.
You know, it might be a couple of seasons until they get of size and start, you know, growing larger. Then all of a sudden, you should start seeing some blooms. And I would go ahead and a lot of people will take cuttings and put them in water.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and they'll start rooting in water. But once you go from that stage to putting them in soil, sometimes that transitional phase is not really always the best.
How do you go about making it?
Well, I kind of, once it starts rooting, then I'm in the process of trying to get it in soil right away.
Okay.
I find it best. It's this is interesting. I'm going to give you, I don't mean to get sidetracked here. Are you familiar with the peace lily?
I am.
Okay. Yeah. And you know how everybody would like to take the peace lily, buy a smaller version of it, and put it into like at the top of a glass vase.
Right.
And they'd have one of those fighting fish in the bottom of it. What's the name of that fish? There used to be one in here.
I don't know.
Yeah. But you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So you're removing all of the soil from around the root structure of the peace lily. And it does well. It survives. But what's ironic about it, what's interesting, is on the flip side, if it's in a container with soil and you keep it overly wet, it will tell you and it will go, it'll go by the wayside rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting concept. Like, well, why can it sit in water here, but not here in soil? So there's two different things going on. But she was talking about her cuttings. I highly doubt if she'll see them bloom for a couple of seasons. And just stay with it. Get those in the ground so they get rooted in. And just know where they are. Mark mm-hmm. them because they're still relatively small. And that you don't run over those with a lawnmower or know where they are in the landscape and pull them by mistake when you're weeding.
Yeah, that this also plays into, we often recommend people keep a journal, a garden journal.
That's a great idea.
When you do that.
That's a great idea. Just know where things are, know what you've been doing. And if you're like me, I forget where I was last week. I'm not even going to go there. I'm going to leave that one go.
Yeah,
I just want to tell you another story. It was kind of funny. But she had also asked, can you take cuttings from magnolias and various things? You certainly can. And again, when you take cuttings, take a lot. Use the rooting hormone powders.
Mm-hmm.
That really helps with some disease issues sometimes. And it also helps with your cuttings to get better suited and well rooted in. Use different soil mediums. And when I say that, sometimes you can use just a standard, like a soil mix from Fertilum or someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And it has perlite in it, a little bit of peat moss. Also use just sand straight up. I've also used just perlite straight up. And some of those things like perlite and sand, you'll have to water a little more often than you will those things that are in soil, because soil will hold moisture a little longer. Whereas sand and perlite, water permeates it and runs through it rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things that root better in different mediums than others. And I can give you a perfect example. A few years ago, I was rooting some PJM rhododendrons, and I found it best that they did well for me in sand. And then they rooted in really well, and then I planted them into another medium.
Gotcha.
So it's fun to experiment and do those kind of things with. It's fun to propagate by division and so forth, and various things have better times of propagation than others. But cuttings are very fun to work with as well, and getting that nice tip growth that's young and tender, you peel back a couple of the leaves, dip it in water, and then into the rooting hormone powder, and then into your soil medium. I am not a propagation guru nor do I know a great deal about it or have done much in the past, but it's a very interesting subject matter and it's very easily done. You just have to be patient and you have to take a lot of cuttings. You could take 100 cuttings and you might get 25 out of the 100. You might get 60 out of 100. And when it comes to the nursery world and the grand scheme of things and big pictures, a lot of these guys are working with cuttings, they're working with bare roots, and the more that they do, the more successful they are. But a lot of times, it's all for nothing. And that's why some things are a little more pricier than others.
Mm-hmm.
It's how well and how easily that you can grow it. And that's where it all comes from. It's what it all boils down to. But as always, thanks for staying in touch with us here on Facebook. Angela, good luck to you. Have fun at doing the cuttings, mm-hmm. and let us know how it goes.
Keep us in the loop. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment when we come back.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about a blooming perennial that everybody likes. Sometimes we lose this particular perennial if we have a cold winter, and we'll tell you what it is when we come back.
Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were talking to Rick on the line about some issue. He might have a little bit of a fungus going on his tree or mold. And you have a couple of suggestions for him?
Well, you know, when you hear things like that and so forth, immediately what I think is insect activity, where things like the honeydew secretions and so forth collect in such a way that you have this black sooty mold. And it may not even be that. Mm-hmm. You know, those are some of the things that comes to mind first. And this is one of those situations, you know, like I was telling Rick, you know, don't do anything, you know, heroic. Don't get a scrub brush and start going out there with some sort of a solution of some sort and scrubbing it off, because you certainly don't want to do that either. But this is one of those situations where it really pays dividends to get in touch with an ISA certified arborist.
Yeah.
And, you know, have them come in. That's what they do. They work with trees. They've seen these issues with trees, and they have experience working with these issues with trees. And, you know, it's just like you going to a physician or to a doctor for a certain ailment. You know, we can talk about things, you and I and various other people, from the surface, but when it gets into the nitty gritty sometimes and you're not certain, you're not certain. But, you know, we know the people who we can bring into the fold, so to speak. And we can certainly find out, you know, just what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to selecting an arborist, you know, be very diligent about that and be very careful and do your homework. Just don't have somebody come in that comes in. It has a truck with a magnetic sticker on it and, you know, whatever, you know, check these people out, get references too. But just a couple of people that I have high respect and regards for that I've always heard good things about in the industry. You know, I'm going to throw them your way, Rick. And also, we will also be in touch with you as well. Is, you know, you have Stang Tree Services.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Stang, and I think now his son's involved. I don't know them personally, but I've heard a lot of great things about Stang Tree Service. And their phone number is 513-936-9777. Also, Ron Rothouse. I think highly of Ron. I've heard a lot of good things about Ron, the Arbor Doctor. Ron's phone number is 513-661-2673. Great guy. These guys are all into what they do. They really like what they do, and they will do whatever's necessary for the best for your tree. And these guys, too, will tell you if there's something wrong with your tree that's too far gone, they're not going to lead you on and draw you in and do all these various things if there's not going to be a good likely outcome. That's why I like these guys. This is what it's about. And a lot of times I'm reluctant about, you know, referring people, because, you know, it's when I hear good positive things about various people that I will refer those individuals. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, Tim Back Tree Service, 513-742-8733. Or just simply call your local extension office and say, hey, who are the certified arborists on your list? And take it from there and ask for their recommendations. And hopefully, Rick, we can get some information to you before today's show is over. Or if not, I have your contact information, and I will certainly follow up with you, that's for sure. But those situations are always interesting. And right now, a lot of people are coming into the garden center with various leaves showing symptoms of various things from various tree species. And when we have weather like what we're having, what we've been experiencing, a lack of moisture, a lack of rainfall, along with high humidity and various things, our trees don't take a liking to that. You will see various things starting to occur with your tree. It could be leaf drop. Okay, trees have the ability, you know, when they know they're in trouble, what are they going to do? They're going to shed. It's just like, you know, you're getting rid of things that you can't support in order to support the overall good of that tree, and that it can make it through the fall season, winter season, and hopefully bounce back next spring. So the deciduous trees that start doing that, that is a built-in mechanism for their protection. Also, you'll see leaf discoloration. You'll see leaf scorch. We're talking about a little bit of this stuff earlier this morning. Again, those are indicators of short-term drought stress, and we need to water. It's almost like, hey, I got to perform CPR on some of these guys. Don't let it go on for a lengthy period of time, because what ultimately ends up happening is we lose some of the feeder roots. They die off. And as a result of losing feeder roots and so forth, we create a great deal of stress on this tree. And then next year, maybe part of that tree will not leaf out. These are unexplained things that occur that it just doesn't happen overnight. It can take a couple of years in succession where these things are progressively happening year after year after year. And ultimately, it's lights out. It's been going on. You've allowed it to go on. Take care of those trees, because it costs an awful lot of money to replace a tree. And you have to, one, take a tree out, have somebody come in and grind the stump out. And in a lot of times, most situations, if you have a tree of size, you can't replace that tree. You won't live long enough to replace that tree. And I don't mean that in a bad way. You know, when you're approaching the upper years, like Ernie and myself, and we're on the upward side, you know, and you'll hear some of the older people that come into the garden center, give me something that grows quickly. I don't have time. I'm right. not here for another 40 years to see this tree get to its mature height. So I find, and I think that, and I'm not, you know, I hope this doesn't sound like a hard sermon in any way, shape, or form, but I really think a couple of dollars, you paying attention, paying for your water bill, although you don't want to write that check every month. You know, I understand that, but I think it's easier to take care of something and pay a couple of dollars up front than it is to come on the tail end of it. And you're like, wow, I wish I would have.
And try to replace it.
How many times we've done that? I wish I would have.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this. I wish I would have paid somebody to come down and inject my ash tree that's down further in my yard. I thought, you know what? I'm going to let it progressively thin out on its own. Mm-hmm. And now I wish I would have taken care of that tree. And I knew better, and I know better. And these are decisions that I made that I wish I wouldn't have made in such a way that I did. And that's why I'm trying to pass that along to you. You know, don't look back and say, I wish I would have, because you can never, never replace a tree that's of size and of substance with something younger and new. It just doesn't happen that way.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment when we come back.
Well, I want to talk about our perennial still.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful, attractive gray foliage with intense fragrance. Can you guess it? We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Get it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Ron on the line.
We do. Good morning, Ron. Thank you for calling in. We have with this Ron Rothaus, the arbor doctor. And Ron, we're just reaching out to you in regards to a call we just got a few moments ago from a listener about a black sooty type of mold at the base of their maple tree. Any ideas? Or?
Well, I have a few. I did not hear the call, unfortunately. Do you remember, was it a red maple or a sugar maple?
He did not say.
Okay. On sugar maple, I've seen black trunks in sooty mold for, you know, I don't know how much you've said about it so far, but it's a fungus. That tends to grow on the sweet sap that drips in the tree many times from an insect or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
On sugar maples, I've seen it at times that I really can't pin it down. Sometimes, you know, we don't know if it's just something exuding out of the tree when it's sap flow in the spring, or if there's
right.
aphids there at some time of the year. And you always have to think about scale, which is an insect which mm-hmm. can suck juices out of the tree and basically poop the stuff out, although honeydew is a much nicer term than bug poop.
Right.
And the sooty mold grows on that. Now, on red maples, and this is why I asked which one it is, red maples get some other types of scale more commonly, and some of those do exude honeydew
right.
and get sooty mold on them. And so in those cases, you know, if you can pin it down and find out that it actually has scale,
right.
and some of these scale insects are very small, but they look like little scales on the trunk, or on the twigs.
Right.
And if you can pin it down that there's actually scale on the tree, that is something that you want to you want to address. And it's sometimes not real easy to address, but scale can ultimately, you know, kind of chronically degrade the tree and ultimately kill it. And you really don't want that to happen.
Right.
Aphids that I mentioned earlier, not a big deal.
Right.
I mean, they're not going to hurt the tree. So, part of it is finding out what the cause is.
Right.
And certainly the scale's a bigger deal. I can't think of too much else that would cause sooty mold like that.
Right. What you're saying, I agree with. Yeah, typically it's a result of honeydew excretions or insect activities from sucking insects. What would your approach be to something like that if it is a red maple?
Well, it's sometimes kind of tricky. We'll use a combination of there's a chemical called dinotefuran, one of the brand names is Safari. That can be fairly effective on scale.
Mm-hmm.
Imidacloprid can be fairly effective.
The right.
brand name is Merit. Bear Tree and Shrub will have that active ingredient in it. Some of the armored scales, which honestly don't really produce honeydew most of the time, are not as controlled by that. So I'd probably go for one of those one of the systemics in the wintertime. You can spray with a horticulture oil or a dormant oil to try to kind of smother them. So we kind of go that route. We also follow degree days. On my website, I have a links page, and there's a phenology calendar, degree days calendar,
uh-huh.
and you can actually follow that. It's basically a correlation between temperature, bloom times, and insect emergence.
Right.
And when you follow that calendar, you can see where different scale insects are hatching. And when they hatch, and the new little babies are walking around looking for a new place to take up residence, they're vulnerable to a lot of, you know, a wider range of insecticides.
Right.
So if you can hit that week or so, you can sometimes have a lot more effectiveness.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. Hey, Ron, do you mind holding on for a moment? Will you give us your contact information real quick?
Contact information, I have a website at arbordoctor.com, and the phone number is 513-661-2673.
Perfect. We're going to take a real quick break, and if you don't mind holding on, I want to ask you this as well. You know, we're experiencing a lot of drought stress with a lot of our trees, some of the older existing trees and the newer ones that we just planted. That leads into a vulnerability as well with insects, so I'd like to get your input on that when we come back out.
Be glad to.
All right. Thanks, Ron. Yes, we have Ron Rodhouse, the Arbor Doctor, with us. We were just asking Ron a couple of questions that we just got from a caller earlier. But, Ron, you know, with the lack of moisture here, and I know it's been a little sporadic in regards to what some people have been receiving when a thunderstorm pops up or rolls through the tri-state, but, boy, without moisture, it creates a great deal of stress on our trees, does it not?
It does. It's kind of a chronic, you know, another chronic problem that develops over time. I actually have a area on my website, the direct link is weather.arbordoctor.com, but I have an area there, and I put it on my blog too, where I do a weekly soil moisture condition monitoring update, and I just updated that this morning, and I kind of give an overview of how dry things are. It's kind of interesting. I mean, a new transplant, a small tree, plants that are in direct sun, they're going to dry out pretty quick, and some of those are in pretty dire straits right now if you haven't been watering them. Bigger trees with deeper root systems, you know, a week ago we were still not too far from normal. I mean, it was starting to get a little crispy, but we still had some decent soil moisture. As the drought conditions or dry conditions progress and plants, you know, begin to get dehydrated, the U.S. Forest Service has done some studies that the incidence of insects and disease and tree mortality increase for 10 years after a drought. So, you know, some of the damage, the physiological damage that can be done to a tree or a shrub or a plant can be long-lasting and long-term. And sometimes, especially with a big tree, they don't wilt and show it right away. They'll show a year or two later. And we're certainly seeing that a lot in blue spruce trees. There's a lot of problems with blue spruce trees.
Ooh.
They have the needle cast and things like that. But, I mean, we're seeing a large decline in blue spruce throughout the Midwest. And if you follow back, I mean, 2012, we had 6 days in Cincinnati that were over 100 degrees. You think about where blue spruce live in their native habitat in the higher elevations of the Rocky Mountains. It doesn't get up to 100 degrees.
It's a lot cooler, right?
Yeah. So So they're not acclimated to that. And people tell me, well, I watered them. I say, it's fine, but unless you're air conditioning the tree, it's still suffering, you know?
Right, right.
So.
Yeah, I've been battling rhizosphera for the last couple of years. And, you know, do you have a certain treatment approach for some of the conifers like that, the blue spruces, if in fact you're seeing that rhizosphera needle cast issue?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing you have to decide is if the tree is still viable.
Right.
Because people will ask me, you know, can you keep the tree alive? And I'll say, sure, but it's going to look like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree. So you have to start with a viable tree. I mean, it still has to have enough left that it's worth having. Fungicide treatments are pretty effective, but it's not a magical cure, and it's something that you kind of have to keep up over time. And really, you know, as with anything, you know, the fungicide treatments combined with a reasonable mulching, watering, you know, on a reasonable basis. When I say reasonable, on watering, it's probably about an inch to an inch and a half every 7 to 10 days in the absence of rain. So
right.
The rain either gives it to you or you give it. And we're not teasing it every day. We're usually giving it that maybe in one big
right.
watering a week and letting it dry out in between. So, I mean, all those other care things. What you absolutely don't want to do is to rush out there with fertilizer and start fertilizing a stressed tree.
I couldn't agree with you any more than that, right?
Yeah. A lot of studies that show, you know, because people kind of misunderstand how plants work. We always say, you know, feed your lawn, feed your trees. Well, botanically, that's not what we're doing. We're kind of giving them vitamin pills. They feed themselves through photosynthesis. And when we give them nitrogen, high nitrogen, it's kind of telling the tree or the shrub to grow. It'll try to do that. But what's it going to use to grow? It's going to dip into its whatever it has, its reserves. And if its rainy day bank account is almost depleted already, it's going to deplete almost to the point that it's dead. Or sometimes we can kill a tree by over-fertilizing it.
Right,
so
right.
Definitely don't want to do that.
No, good point there. You know, I really appreciate you reaching out to us and talking with us this morning, Ron. And give us your contact information once more in case someone wants to reach out to you and have you take a look at anything that's in our landscape that's troubling them.
Sure. Our company is Arbor Doctor. Phone number is 513-661-2673. Website is arbordoctor.com. And my insane weather hobby is at weather.arbordoctor.com.
That's all good.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate it.
Have
the
a
call.
Good weekend. Thank you.
You too.
All
thank
right.
You.
Bye.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment. And when we come back,
yeah, we'll get to that perennial. I promise you.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Man, it was a great segment. A lot of awesome information there from...
Well, I tell you what, when you talk to those guys that know their stuff, ISA certified arborists like that, you can just listen and listen and learn and learn. And, you know, they've been in the field. You know, they've been in and out of it. They've been dealing with those issues for a number of years. And like I said, you know, just... I don't know Ron personally, but things I have heard about Ron have been stellar, and I think when you have a reputation like that, that's one you want to keep, and that's one well worth passing on to others that are in need of help. So thanks again, Ron. I always appreciate that. And, you know, just as he stated, you know, you see those issues that with what we're experiencing with drought, couple years later, you know, it just manifests itself. It keeps going and it keeps going. And when trees are under a great deal of stress, boy, insects know it and they have their way with it. That's
the alarm has sounded.
That's it in a nutshell. But anyway, okay. Their attractive gray foliage and their intense fragrance makes them a must have. Everyone loves lavender.
Mm.
And lavender loves the heat, but it also likes, you know, not when it's really, really humid. But last year, I know a lot of people did lose a little bit of their lavender because of the cold winter.
Right.
And I remember back in 2012, that was another brutal winter, 12 and 13. 13 wasn't, you know, all that kind either. But a lot of times, you know, unfortunately, you know, as much as we like lavender, if you lose it, shake it off.
Right.
Get up. You know, you fall off that bike, you get back up and start pedaling. Get more lavender, right?
Right.
Buy more. Need
Green
more
plant.
Need more cowbell. We need more lavender.
That's right.
But what's really important, you know, when it comes to this particular perennial, there's a great deal of value with it. It looks wonderful in beds as a border or, you know, accompanying other things. It's just got that beautiful gray, silver-looking foliage that when the purplish, like bluish-purplish spike bloom raises up above the foliage, very, very attractive. And they love the sun. You know, they need a sunny location, especially if you want to be successful with lavender. Most importantly, in addition to sun, drainage is a must. I mean, they do not like wet feet. They do not want to sit in a soggy, wet location going out, you know, all along through the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have clay soil, what I want you to do is just amend it with loose, you know, compost. You know, we need to make a better sandy soil where we can provide for really, really good drainage.
Gotcha.
And actually, the poorer the soil, the better the lavender will do. So
really?
It's not really particular or fussy about, like, real fertile soil.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a pH where it's neutral, around 7, you know, maybe give or take a little bit, will be definitely suitable. Do you, now, you know, you have trouble sleeping at night, right?
I do, yeah, on occasions.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to help you sleep if you take, like, a little sachet or a packet of lavender and put it by your pillow or your nightstand at night.
Wow.
Now, I've not done that. I can't tell you it really happens, but that's supposed to be the case. You ever heard that?
Willing to try anything.
Huh? But, you know, when it comes, you know, coming out of the winter with lavender, you know, a little bit of spring care is required, nothing major. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I always encourage people to cut their lavender back by 1/3 to a half. As soon as you start to see some of the new growth emerging for the upcoming season. So what we're trying to do there, in essence, is we're trying to move the winter damage stuff, shoots, and shape the lavender in itself and get it ready for the upcoming season.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to encourage people, like I said, cut it back to 1/3 to a half and let it start from there. You know, if you have lavender, you've had it around for a couple of seasons, two or three or maybe four, consider pruning it back by 1/2 to 2/3, you know, give it a really good cut back,
right?
Especially if it's kind of dense and if it's been vigorous over the years. And when mulching, you know, lavender, you know, don't go heavy on the mulch because you don't want to keep the ground too moist if it stays wet for a period of time. But I would stay around 1 to 2 inches with a little bit of mulch, nothing really, really heavy, or do not overdo it. And summer care, just deadhead the spent flowers, tidy it up a little bit to cut, you know, to keep it reblooming and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You'll need to water lavender sometimes. It'll tell you when it's dry. You'll see it wilt down a little bit. And occasionally, you know, I don't water it frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. Don't fall into that trap or that mode of thinking. You know, a good deep drink and then back off. You know, a good occasional soaking and everything will be fine. And leave them alone in the winter. Give them a little bit of extra protection, you know, covering them a little bit with maybe some evergreen boughs if you can pick them up, or cut stuff off the tree lot. Just things that helps protect them, you know, going through the winter months. And, you know, I got a couple favorites. And I don't – do you or Lisa – you have any lavender? Does Lisa like to grow?
I think
grow?
She has some lavender up there in the top of the hill.
Does she?
Yeah.
Now, does she ever cut it or anything?
Yep,
you know, it's a wonderful fragrance. And actually, you can cut a little bit of lavender, you know, put it on the table and so forth. But one of my favorites is Provence. It's a great variety for bouquets. It can also be used for a little culinary use, which I never use lavender from a culinary standpoint. I know some people have used lavender for various things. It's got the narrower, like bluish gray, like foliage, a little bit. It has the spikes and it has a great intense fragrance to it. So I like Provence. Munstead is another favorite. Let me go back to Provence too. I don't want to forget what kind of height you can expect it to grow to, anywhere from 2.5 to 3 feet in height. So, Provence is a good one to look for at your local garden centers and nurseries. And probably a couple of the most popular varieties is Munstead, anywhere from 12 to 16 inches on average, and Heathcote. And a lot of people will pronounce those a little differently than I can sometimes butcher things, but that's what I say. That's how I pronounce those.
Gotcha. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we got to take a break. When we come back, Tony, we have Karen on the line who's got a question about trimming some of her bushes, and we'll talk about that when we get back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Karen on the line who's got a question about trimming some of the bushes she has. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Tony. Hi. This is Karen from Florence. I haven't talked to you for a while, but I had a question about a few of my hollies, and I have a euonymus, and I've got like a small evergreen, and I've been trying to keep it smaller, so... Mm-hmm. But I haven't had a chance to get out and trim them, and I didn't know how late I can wait to do that, if I shouldn't do it at all until next year or what.
Are your hollies evergreen or deciduous? Do they lose their foliage?
No, they don't lose their foliage.
Okay. And are you just trying to shape those? Or?
Yeah, there's I don't know if you remember when I had to chop several of them down to nothing because they were turning brown. They were funky, and we went through this a couple years ago. And so I was thinking maybe I should trim the one. Well, they haven't been trimmed for a while, the bigger ones, and they're kind of losing leaves underneath. So I wanted to trim them back and kind of help them to look a little bit better. And then one of my hollies is next to a euonymus, which is like growing together, and I didn't trim that when it had the euonymus, when it had like the blooms on it, but I haven't had a chance to get out there, and I thought, well, I don't know, I don't want to do it too late.
Right. Well, you bring up a great point here, and I'm going to start with, right now we're nearing the end of July, going into August, so anybody who has, spring blooming shrubs, refrain from pruning. Because right now they're setting up their buds for next year's spring production or blooming production. Okay? Uh-huh. So anything that blooms in the spring, usually July 4th is the cutoff time for me. Some people say middle of July. But for the most part, those buds are starting to set up for next season to give you that bloom production. So that's a good rule of thumb to follow. Typically, spring blooming shrubs are best suited to prune those back, shape those, you know, in such a way after they are finished blooming. Therefore, if you know, it keeps you from pruning them late in the year. And a lot of times when people will come into the garden center, Karen, and they'll say, hey, you know what? My lilac didn't bloom this spring. And we get to talking about it and they'll say, yeah, it's getting plenty of sun, yada, yada. And, I'll ask them, when did you prune it? And they'll say, well, my husband pruned it last fall. More than likely, he pruned out the bloom buds for the next spring season.
Uh-huh.
So refrain from that. Summer blooming things, I just want to touch base on this real quick, and then we'll get to the holly. But summer blooming things, you know, you can prune those, like some of your paniculata, your blooming, the hydrangeas that like the sun and so forth. You can prune things like that late winter, early spring, your rose bushes and so forth, late winter, early spring, and they will bloom on new growth. Just to give you an example. So things that bloom in the summer and later, you can prune those at that time. Now, when it comes to pruning evergreens, you know, some evergreens you can prune, you'll cut into a little bit, or you'll shear those evergreens, various approaches to different types. Now, with hollies, you know, you can prune those right now, but I would do it lightly.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of times people will prune them before they start to flush. And there's people that will prune them right after they flush with new growth and it hardens off. I like to prune them after that new growth has come on those, on the hollies, and let them harden off after that point. But right now, I mean, there's not any problem or anything that would prohibit you from pruning back your evergreen hollies right now a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you can certainly do that. The situation where you had mentioned you had the euonymus and holly kind of growing into one another.
Uh-huh.
The longer you let that go on, the more unsightly it becomes and a little bit more difficult that it becomes to kind of separate the two.
Uh-huh.
And one will hinder the other as far as restricting it from light and various things and from developing and continuing a nice growth habit.
Uh-huh.
So I would be more apt to cut back the euonymus than I would the holly in that situation. Euonymus is, you know, they can... Is it one of the variegated varieties?
Yeah, it's the yellow and green.
Yeah, I mean, you can butcher on those. The only thing you have to worry about with euonymus is scale. But certainly go after those. You know, you and I have had conversations in the past about your hollies. How are they doing, by the way?
They seem like they're hanging in there. Mm-hmm. I just, like I said, I know the ones that were bigger and like where my three that I chopped down and then there was one that's just huge. And it's, I mean, it's seen a little bit of wear, too. That's why I wanted to trim. And I thought, well, maybe I should just trim that back to match the other ones. And then there's a couple other ones that are, you know, they just, and maybe it's the weather, too, that they just don't look that good. And I thought, well, trimming them back might help.
You know, it does to a degree. It always keeps things kind of tidy, and then, you know, you're in tune with it. I remember one year, I don't know if this had any bearing on me pruning back a particular holly in my landscape, but I kind of shaped it in such a way where it had a canopied look. And it, for whatever reason, there shortly after, it was like, wow, it just turned completely brown. Browner than Ernie's last name. But, yeah, you know, I know that you and I have talked about your hollies. We talked about using various holly tone or you know, iron types of products. And usually that helps a lot with iron deficiencies and so forth. But a lot of our hollies, their success has a lot to do with the pH levels of our soil, which we most of us have high pH levels, which locks the soil up from various nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when plants are in an environment where they're not in their ideal pH range, no matter what you fertilize with or what you give them, they struggle taking it up and getting it into the plant.
Mm-hmm.
I think you even had a soil sample done, did you?
Yeah, I did. I did. And
Was it within range?
I think it was okay.
Yeah.
And two, about this evergreen that I have. I mean, it just started years ago from a little sprig, and I just stuck it there. And I've been trying to shape it to keep it smaller. And so can I trim that at any time?
Yeah, is it an arborvitae, or do you know what it is?
I know. I don't know. It's like the branches or what on it are kind of long and skinny, and it does kind of have some stickers on it.
Is it kind of airy in a way, or is
no,
it dense?
I mean, it seems more compact.
The juniper?
Well, it's some kind of an evergreen it's some kind of juniper or something like that.
Send me a photograph of it.
Okay.
But, you know, you can trim those lightly, like you shear them just to shape them.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you go deep into some of those evergreens and you get into the part of the evergreen where there isn't any growth, so to speak. You know, it's all stem and woody. A lot of times they don't respond favorably to that.
Yeah, I just try to, because it's probably about maybe 3 feet tall and about 2.5 feet round, whatever, and I've been trying to keep it smaller. So I've been just trying to cut off the new growth, but this year I haven't had a chance to do any of that.
Well, junipers, you know, a lot of people will prune them early in the season, okay? But really, there's no rule of thumb. If you were to shear it a little bit and so forth, you're going to be okay. It's nothing detrimental. You know, do not go into it too heavily.
Okay. And up to how late can I do that?
Well, you know, there's really not a specified time. I would not do it in, you know, late fall going into the winter.
Okay.
Because if you have any new growth for whatever reason at that point in time, it's very tender and a suspect to, you know, maybe winter damage or cold damage.
So we're saying no later than the middle of August, or?
I say that I would not go past it any further than September.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, August would be fine. Anything that comes on, if you're getting a subsequent new growth to where you made the little bit of the shearing cuts, it should be hardened off well enough before it goes into the winter months.
Okay.
But you just don't want to do it too late with the junipers.
Mm-hmm.
Junipers, you know, usually I say late winter, sometime in March, you know, you can prune those a little bit. And even going into the summer months, you know, but you just got to shear those. You know, you don't go into it too deep.
Yeah. I just try to keep it so it's a smaller shape, and I don't want it to get too tall, but
right.
I've been trying not to cut too much off, but just kind of keep it in the shape that I want it.
Yeah, so. Yeah, because, you know, you just don't want to get into that old wood because there's no needles there. So
yeah.
You'll be fine. Just lightly shear it and shape it.
Okay, so I can cut the hollies through until September, you said, and just but lightly cut those trims.
Yeah, you could do your hollies like right now, okay? And, you know, the flowers that are produced is always on the current season's growth, so you're fine.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Kim,
you have a good weekend. Good to hear from you.
Thanks. Yeah, you too.
Keep us in the loop. Bye.
Okay, bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. That wraps it up for us. It is going to be a hot weekend. Make sure you stay hydrated and equally stay focused on keeping all of your plants hydrated and your trees. Water everything. Then go to a water park and have some more fun. We'll be back next week in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys.